Okay, so this is the PNI Institute call for whatever day it is. June 13th, 2018. I hope I have the year right. Anyway, today we're talking about a weak signal detection. And our names are, I'm Cynthia Kurtz. Nobody else today.
Yeah. Come closer. You can hardly hear you.
Oh, really?
Okay. Yeah.
Can you hear me now? There's some kind of a noise in the background. You guys hear that?
Yeah.
It must be my computer.
Maybe it's a fan or something? It's quieter. I don't know. Okay, somebody else say their name.
This is Jerry Talley. I'm an independent organizational development consultant out in California.
Did I say already? I didn't.
Nope.
Okay. Oh, go ahead, Mark. Oh, Mark, I thought you were going to say something.
Nope.
Okay. I'm Cynthia Kurtz, and I'm a independent consultant slash, well, I don't know what, human being. And I wrote this book, and I came up with the name Participatory Narrative Inquiry only because I got tired of people saying, what is it you mean by this story stuff? So, and really, in some ways, it's too bad because as soon as you put a name on something, it puts limits on it. And also, I guess it's too long of a name because some people are like, whoa, that's complicated. And sometimes I wish that I had picked a simpler name, like story stuff or something. Okay, go. Somebody else.
Okay, my name is Harold van Gerderen. I'm from the Netherlands. I run a company called Story Connect. And we basically do what I wrote in the book, plus invent a little bit more every now and then. And we do a lot of projects in healthcare with product innovation, with youth care evaluation and things like that. And recently also into safety and security. It's your turn, Mark.
I think I already did it, but Mark Anderson, an independent in Minnesota.
Okay, I didn't hear that before, but maybe it got cut out by the noise. Okay, so today we're going to talk about weak signal detection. So we're going through these list of things that I wrote up in the book a long time ago as things you can do with PNI, which I call this just catching emerging trends. So noticing things that might be important later. Some people call it weak signal detection. I've never really liked that term because a weak signal is just a signal you've decided to pay attention to. It's just a thing. It's just something you've decided to pay attention to. And I don't think that I think the term weak signal detection makes it sound like these signals that are weak are somehow able to jump out of things by themselves. And I think that gives people a sort of false sense of that somehow algorithms can make things jump out at you as meaningful when they can't do that. Anyway.
When I heard the term, I thought of situations where I've had maybe 200 or 300 people in a room working on a problem like a school district boundaries or whatever. And one person will pop up and express an opinion and everyone immediately poo-poos it and dismisses it and he gets quiet. And then about 3 hours later, he brings it up again and everyone goes, oh, damn, that's a really good idea. You should have said that before. And you realize that the odd idea, the outsider, actually had an insight that was invisible to everybody who was up to their eyebrows in the phenomena. And that's what I think of as sort of weak signal. It was a voice of one among hundreds. It wasn't particularly respected, But at the end of the day, it turned out to be the first choice.
So an invisible yet useful insight.
Yeah.
That would bring, that term would really make sense because it would, it's human, you know. The problem I have with the term weak signal detection, which I guess a lot of people are using, is it makes it sound so algorithmic and mathematical that there's no people involved.
Yeah.
And it creates this false sense of inevitability or something. That it's just a matter of poring over the data more.
Yeah.
And I don't think that actually works.
Why don't we call it weak signal detection?
I didn't hear it. Why don't we call it what?
Wimpy.
Yeah? Well, I think the word signal is the problem.
Well, I have the idea that detection is the problem, is more the problem, because you can have signal as in data signal over a wire, but you could also have it in the semiotic way, that something is signaled, that things come together. And so, again, this is a matter of what kind of definitions you use, whether this term means something completely useless or something quite valuable if you understand what you're looking for. Going on Jerry's example, there was a guy that told me that one of our customers is this large money distribution center, and they were, under tunneled. Somebody dug a tunnel from outside the fence to inside the facility. And only after the robbery had been tried, there were people saying, I heard this noise going on that was never there before. And it was several people that had heard the noise, didn't talk about it, at least not to security. But these are the same kind of signals that happens with child abuse. It's several people that see something, hear something, don't act on it, or with PNI, should act on it, so that these weak signals or these individual signals come together to form a signal that suddenly jumps a bit out of the noise, the background noise. And I think that's what PNI does very well, to use stories to create stronger signals just above the noise. Like you wrote in your blog, Cynthia, that you said, did you hear that? There was somebody that picked up a signal that for other people were just noise. And I think when several people do that, then you're very close to reaching. They discover the trend, or they discover the signal, or they... So on one side, detection, I don't like the word. On the other hand, it's... weak signal selection could be a better word.
Yeah. Well, that's why I wrote this thing called a signal is a choice. So that, you know, we pick a signal out of the noise, and that's what makes it a signal. You know, I read it, I can't find it again. I don't know where it was, but I read something somewhere once that said that Shannon, who was the guy who came up with this whole information theory thing, he was very upset later on about how people took his work that had to do with, not with people interacting with each other, but with, you know, like technological things. And he was upset that people used it as a metaphor for people talking, and then it sort of crept into all this discourse about people's communication. He was like, no, don't do that. That people don't, you know, don't, it, it, that metaphor doesn't work, because you're making people seem like machines, and it's not like that. That there's all these other things happening. But I think that this term, weak signal detection, is part of that, trying to sort of make people into these simple machines where I send a signal and there's information and you retrieve it. And it's not like that. You know, it's like I imbue all kinds of meaning. Some of it gets through, some of it doesn't. You add all kinds of things, and then you bounce it back and it changes. And, you know, it's like it's a poor metaphor for communication. And sometimes when you have a bad metaphor, you end up making bad decisions, because your way of testing ideas is wrong. I wish I could find that thing where it said that he was unhappy about that later on.
Yeah,
I think detection is a bad word. I mean, I like selection better, yeah, because it has to do with, I mean, actually, if you put sense-making into it somewhere, then I really like the word sense-making because as it was defined by, what's his name, Wyke, mm-hmm. I felt like, you know, if you read his stuff, you couldn't possibly get a machine metaphor into there. I mean, there's just, it's so messy and fun and you know, crazy that... that it's really human, you know, and so you can really see a stark difference between those two ways of looking at how people think and do stuff.
Who is that you just mentioned?
Carl Wyke's, I don't know how you say it, Wyke, I don't know.
Yeah.
His stuff on sense making. I mean, his writing's a little bit hard to follow, but it's very lively, you know, it's full of life, basically. And when people take the Shannon information stuff and it becomes very simplified, the life is kind of drained out of it and the fun, really. I mean, you got to keep the fun in there or it's not going to work, right? The messiness that, like what you were saying, Jerry, where the organized and the self-organized are mingled together. You don't keep that in there.
Can you see it?
Yeah, I don't know how much is in... on sense making in that book. Is there a lot?
No, but it's a very practical book on how you use all his sense making stuff for managing or better detecting things that might go wrong. So this is the book that translates all that in almost into a recipe, although it's not a recipe, it's more a way of thinking. But and that all happened when Mrs. Sutcliffe started working with him 20 years ago. She finally got him into writing something that's readable.
Yeah.
Because the rest is just prose. My goodness. Yeah. But, Cynthia, like we discussed just before this talk, we are talking about weak signal detection in PNI, and you said something very useful by saying weak signal detection can happen in any phase of PNI. Mm-hmm. And I had sent you a couple of examples where I said, well, it can happen here, it can happen there. But just before this talk, I realized that today, we are planning a project to do an evaluation for a very knowledge-intensive organization that's also active in healthcare. And there was already the third person in 2 weeks that said to me, well, they have these projects that don't deliver. So these are three small... This is in the P&I planning phase that people already start saying, somebody makes a remark. If the first person makes the remark, some of their projects don't deliver what they should deliver. And then a second person says it, and a third person says it, then it's becoming a weak signal. First, it's just a datum point, but now it's already the third signal that says, okay, there might be something going on. And that happened in the planning phase. And I think in story collection, it's quite natural that weak voices enter their story, and it's a matter of good facilitation that also the weaker people around the table can share their story and share their perspective. So with story sharing, I think it's very natural that weak signals enter the story collection phase. I wonder if we can find examples of all the phases where weak signal, how you say it, weak signal selection is at play in all the phases.
Because, well, I mean, it's pretty easy to think of them and think of times when I can remember them happening. I mean, people be planning a thing and they think, well, we thought we were going to do a project about this, but in fact, we really want to do a project about this other thing. right? Or we didn't think this mattered, but now we think we have to focus on that. And then during collection, depending on how you do it, if people are talking to each other, there can be all kinds of discoveries during the exchange of stories, right? And even while you're collecting, if you're improving your questions and things as you're collecting, you can discover, like, you know, we asked people these questions, and they didn't want to talk about those things at all. They want to talk about this other thing, and we're going after the wrong thing, so we have to change course.
Yeah, but I would call that a strong signal, not a weak one.
Well, the thing is, strong versus weak is yet another choice, right?
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
What's strong and what's weak? You call it a weak signal. All it means is it's a thing we didn't notice before, right? I mean, what makes something a weak signal versus a strong signal? A strong signal is something we already knew about, right? And a weak signal is something that we didn't.
Well, I would say a weak signal is 15 people worried in a 1,000-person organization that said, well, this strategy will lead to disaster in 2 years' time. And it's just 5 people. It's just 15 people. They have a different opinion. They have a different way of looking at the current situation. To find those 15 people in between all the positive stories of the 1,000, I think that's what weak signal, maybe even detection or selecting that out of the data is what for me weak signal, working with weak signals about. And especially when that group of worried people starts to grow, so it becomes a trend. I think that's one of the things PNI does very well, to find these. If you do this, the classical questionnaire, what do you think of our strategy question in an employee satisfaction survey? Well, you will never find these 15 people because they're hidden in the bell-shaped curve. But if you do it with PNI, you will find 15 people with totally different metadata about the story than just like these smoking nurses that we found a couple of months ago. In a sea of 300 stories, we found one hospital that had smoking nurses near the bedside. I mean, don't laugh.
I'm hearing two different notions of weak signal.
Yeah.
One of them is that it's low volume.
Yeah.
And I can imagine that among the receptionists and clerical staff in an organization, there may be a lot of them and they have a very clear perspective, but they speak in whispers. Mm-hmm. They don't speak up to their boss. They're afraid to, you know, rock the boat. And so they whisper to each other.
So that would mean weak hidden.
The other notion of weak mm-hmm. is that it's rare. Like one in 1,000 persons has that insight, mm-hmm. but we don't see it because it's lost in a distribution.
Okay.
But it's two different notions of weak. One is that it's just low in volume, so it doesn't get heard. And the other is that it's so rare, even if it's spoken forcefully, it still gets lost in the shuffle.
Yeah, that's a good remark.
So the first one is kind of weak as in hidden, as in it's there, but it's obscured by something. And they're whispering for a reason.
Who am I to speak up? Yeah.
Yeah. And then the other one is that it actually isn't happening very much, but it's still important.
Yeah. But it's being ignored because it's so infrequent.
Right, right.
Or the research methodology is not able to pick it up, because if you have a classical employee satisfaction survey and a lot of I find it a difficult word. The cleaning staff and the other people, they will be large in number, but they might have a different answering patterns on the classical survey. Mm-hmm. So you will still find them, I think, unless they are distributed over departments and the whole thing is done by department, which often happens, by the way. Yeah. But if they're not in a separate apartment.
I know in doing organizational surveys, I'm always very careful about breaking out data for a small group
because
it violates their confidentiality. Well, it also also might mask over their unique opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. There's a third sense of weak I'm thinking of, which is the thing that's overshadowed. It isn't necessarily super rare or, you know, hidden for a reason, but there's something else that's so much louder that you can't hear the signal. So like there's this really loud fan and you can't hear this little ticking noise. And only when you turn off the fan do you hear the ticking noise. So that's like that. I mean, you can think of a lot of instances where that would be true, that, you know, everyone's overwhelmed with something. But if you turn your attention away from that overwhelming thing, then you see something else that, well, it's kind of like that. That one would be the dinosaurs and the mammals, right? These little scurrying things that end up being the most of what survives. Although actually the dinosaurs did survive.
Well, that would also be a company that goes through a merger and suddenly everything is about the merger. And so this, you know, small pocket of complaints about sexual harassment gets ignored.
Right, right.
Because
it's right.
Mergers, Ellie, you know?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Interesting.
Okay.
So we have a catalog of weakness.
So we have three notions of weakness.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Is AI robust enough to surface all of them?
I don't know.
I think
you still need something to change where the focus is. You, in your blog, there was some mention of the having a magnifying glass to look at what you wanted to look at.
Mm-hmm.
You still have to change where the focus is, where you're looking.
Well, maybe you're talking about like a weak signal might be hidden in plain sight. Right, it's something that matters, but nobody ever noticed it matters because it's like there's some assumption about it or some blindness that no one's paying attention. But it's not because of some overwhelming thing or rarity or for some whispering reason.
Well, I think we had an example of that in the catalysis study we recently did. Although I will immediately admit, Cynthia, that we didn't come halfway, but okay. Still, there were some signals from policemen that were joining the social services team. And they said, oh my gosh, we have been in these meetings for years, always talking about multi-problem family, number 23, with large debt and child abuse and whatever. And now with this P&I story thing, we get more and more, we finally get these signals of citizens being worried about a noise in the night or litter on the street. And they said if we solve that problem, we will be able to re-engage a lot of citizens because they are, very low in the Maslow level, Maslow pyramid. There were some things wrong in this area that never surfaced into the professional discussion because it was always about these families. But there was some disgruntled feeling in the whole population that is this city is a mess because they don't clean up the street, it's noisy, it's not a good city to live in, and that was a kind of smeared out disgruntled feeling that was hidden under this we should focus on the problematic families thing. Is that what you mean by the third type of weak signal? Covered over? Hidden?
Well, hidden in plain sight. I think that one has to do with blindness because of assumptions or, you know, the sort of common knowledge or the, what's that they say?
Well, the police officer said, of course, we are involved with these problematic families too, because they had to get into the house, get the father out for the night, and take the children into safety. So they were involved with these families, But now with BNI and actually going to this population, there were more stories about litter on the street and noise and things. And they were suddenly far more abundant than they had previously noticed, because they were always talking about the problematic families. So there was a signal hidden that didn't come, that didn't surface without BNI, because everybody was always focusing on the big problems, the huge problems, the dangerous problems, and not the general feeling of disgruntledness that was hidden in the streets.
I think you're making an interesting comment about weak signals. They might be the smoothest, easiest way to enter into a system, precisely because they're not the biggest elephant in the room.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe that's where we can get the most traction, most consensus, get some movement going, and then build on that for something that's a louder signal.
That's what the policeman said. If we solve this problem, we will be much more successful with getting the population engaged.
Yeah.
The other things we try to achieve, like meeting each other more often, joining the barbecue in the park, work together, help families that have sick family members, more participative society. That will only emerge if we solve as a municipality these basic disgruntling feelings that citizens had for years. We are not important to City Hall.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I actually have a fifth one. I've gotten this list. The fifth one I've come up with is literally weak signals. That is, people who have something to say, but they're literally weak, as in powerless, and no one listens to them because they're just at the bottom rung, right? And that, you know, no one has ever listened to them because they don't matter. And if you listen to those people, they will have information that nobody else has, and no one's bothered to ask them before. So that's like a literally weak signal, in the sense of people are literally weak in the system. Mm-hmm. This is interesting, because now we have, I'm kind of trying to summarize these. We have weak signals because of the first one, the whispering, I was calling taboos, like things you don't say, right? Nobody ever says this, and so it's hidden, right? And that would be like this, the smoking nurses. Like if you're smoking and you're a nurse and you're whatever, you wouldn't say that. These, you know, things that are kind of taboo, you wouldn't talk about that. And so it becomes invisible.
They were at bedsides of children. That was the problem.
Yeah, that is a problem.
If they do it in the parking lot, who cares? But that's where the doctors smoke, by the way, too.
They used to recommend cigarettes, right?
Okay.
So you have the taboos versus assumptions, which is not the same thing. The taboo is you don't talk about it because you don't talk about it. But assumptions is more like you don't talk about it because nobody, it's just because of assumptions, you have these blinders and you just don't see outside of them. And those are different things. Then we had rarity, which is more of a statistical thing. That's just like you have these edge cases. Like, for instance, say people who are trans, right? It's so many people don't even know what it means. They don't know anything about it. It's just so outside of life that they can't take these people's views into account or their needs or anything, because, and now people are getting more educated about what does that mean and everything. But it's because it's rare enough. And that also happens with rare diseases and rare allergies and things like that. Like, I have a rare allergy and everybody I talk to is like, what? That's not a thing. And I'm like, yes, it is a thing. And you know, and it there's this process that has to happen when things are rare to educate people about it. So, and that's a weak thing.
I think that also has to do with these people are distributed. There is one over here, there's one over there. It took me 14 years to find another parent in the Netherlands with a child with the same disability as my son.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me 19 years to find the third one. By the way, my son found the third one. Facebook.
So. Yeah, so that's a rarity thing. And then we had the overshadowing thing, which is the louder noise. And then we had the powerlessness, the literally weak thing. So now an interesting thing would be to talk about, like, how could you design projects to sort of find all of these different things?
Yeah, or should we think, what kind of P&I phase is the best to discover that kind of weakness?
I'm not sure you can pick a phase, because to some extent, where things happen in the phases has so much to do with the context of the actual community or organization you're working in, the people who are involved. You know, I'm not sure it's going to happen. It's very dependent on the details of the context, don't you think?
Well, I think if we are talking about this suppressed form that people never spoke up, I think that's partly solved in the collection phase, because the entry of the barrier of entry in P&I is very low. You simply share a story and you can do it anonymously. In most of our projects, we say we don't want to, we just need your story. We don't need your name unless you definitely want to share it. I think that statistical one has the most chances of being discovered in the catalysis phase, because there where you apply statistical methods.
Right.
The weak voices or the different voices, I think, are best discovered in the early parts of the sense-making session, because there people start to read stories and look at data and say, well, my God, they're meaning something completely different than I always thought they would tell. So I wonder if we can make a kind of, I wouldn't say a one-to-one pairing, but more what kind of weakness is more easily discovered or unlikelier to discover it for instance, what would happen in the return phase? What kind of reaction would you get? And the other one, if some part of your demographics is absent, all the cleaners don't respond, that might be something that you notice. No cleaners. Well, usually doctors don't respond. They're too high and mighty to share a story. I'm not sure if that's a signal of weakness or strength, but so absentness can mean both it is weak or it is too lowly for them.
Yeah, but I actually think that all of these things have to
be addressed in every phase.
Well, I was going to say the crux of the thing is the collection phase. That it all has to do with how you design the collection phase. It's who do you talk to, how do you talk to them, and you know, what do you say? And all of these things, if you're not thinking about all of these forms of weakness, then you're not going to collect what you need to drive everything later on.
Even if it's in the sense-making phase, if you got your story form and your story collection wrong, you won't do certain types of weak signal detection later on or then. Yeah,
that's true.
I'm trying to write these so that we can...
You know, it occurs to me that a weak signal is not equally valuable in all circumstances. If I really need a consensus, if I need a large number of people to buy on and, you know, drink the Kool-Aid and wave the flag, then I don't care as much about the three people that think differently.
Yes.
If I need innovation and I need to do something different and we're stuck in the mud, then I want the three novel voices more than the huge crowd.
Yes.
And if my concern is justice, then I may want to listen to the people who have the least opportunity to get to the microphone.
Yeah, if you're Kim Jong-il, you want to find the three people on the square that don't wave the flag to you perfectly in line to kill them. So it depends on your motive, why you, if you don't care that 10 out of 1500 don't agree, Maybe you would care if the 10 grows to 100 and then it's no longer a weak signal, then it's 1/15th of your organization. So I think you're right. It depends on what kind of goals you have with your P&I project to determine what kind of weak signal detection you want to do and why.
Yeah, in some projects it's irrelevant. It's not the point.
No.
Although we were gonna, I mean, on this call we were supposed to talk about specifically the use of P&I for this particular thing. So if you were designing a project whose goal was to surface weak signals and learn and innovate and that sort of thing, then you would have to pay a lot of attention to these things.
Mm-hmm. Well, the other hand is, did you ever do a project, Cynthia, where you didn't discover weak signals?
Oh, no, no.
Oh, so I agree. I never did a project where there were no weak signals. The only thing was, quite often, they were irrelevant to the goals of the project.
Yes, they were interesting and people would learn from them, but it wasn't really the whole reason for it.
Yeah.
But I have done a few projects where that was the whole goal, you know, was to get new ideas and to... Well, no, that's a different one of our things. Get new ideas was a new thing. Was a different thing. But the weak signal thing was kind of a what's coming on the horizon. Well, the horizon scanning thing was all about, which was what do we not know right now that we should know so that we're less surprised.
Yeah, but that sounds like the innovation. Who are the early adopters or the early people that adopt a new value system and see things that others don't? Because
that's why I called it catching emerging trends.
Yeah.
That is, you know, what is happening now that we haven't noticed yet.
Yeah, but it could also be a trend of demotivation in the facility or in the maintenance department.
Go ahead.
We did a project on helicopter maintenance staff. If you then get demotivation in your staff, suddenly helicopters start to fall out of the sky. That's a problem. Yeah.
What if there's a sixth type of weakness?
Goodness, we will end up with eight.
A sixth type might be that it's weak just because it's new. It's something so new and different that no one has kind of thought to even look for a thing like that. That actually, I would say, is another form of weakness. It's kind of related to the assumptions thing, but it's not that you have blinkers on. It's that you never thought to, like, you just haven't checked the sky lately, right? Mm-hmm. It reminds me of this. There was this thing that happened when I was in college that there was this building that had racquetball courts. And one time I was walking with somebody up this flight of stairs and we looked down on this racquetball court. There was a little tiny window high up in the court, right? And I looked down at somebody who was playing a game and I said, I like to look through this window because nobody ever looks up. And on the word up, the guy looked up and he looked right at me. And I was like, well, never say never, you know, because it was just a really weird coincidence that it was exactly what I said. It was negated. So that would be a good example of the assumptions one.
Cynthia, do you do something specific to invite people to share a non-normal, unusual story?
Oh, sure. In fact, that's one of the things I always talk about is that stories are about the edge of experience. So we don't talk about the things that everybody knows. We talk about, we talk about the edges of our experiences, the things that are notable, right? So you don't say, you don't tell somebody a story about how you had a cup of coffee this morning, you know, unless you never have coffee. You know, I would never sit down and say, hey, guess what? I poured myself a cup of coffee this morning and drank it. I mean, it's just, nobody would ever do that. You tell stories about the things that stick out. So when we do projects, a lot of times we'll say, what stands out in your memory over the last month as being something that, you know, you really, what surprised you? That would be a thing we use sometimes.
Okay. And I think that there is a fine line between what you always say, or maybe it's not just a fine line, but if you're in a story circle, and people start responding on each other's story, and the stories get stronger and stronger, you soon end up in performance. So,
or it doesn't always go to performance.
Or honesty, or...
Exactly, it can go to honesty too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it could go into performance, that people start sharing stories, they make up. But still, there might be signals in that that might be valuable for the project.
But this idea of a new thing, like, you know, and like that's one of the reasons that we often, if it's important enough, we'll say, we'll have the question of when did this happen? You know, we'll say, if you look back over the last 6 months or year or whatever time frame, you know, can you remember something that surprised you? And then you say, okay, when exactly did this happen? Sometimes you can see these graphs of changes where there's the sudden peak, you know, like in the recent past. And then you can say, huh, what is this new thing that's happening? You know, or we can sometimes ask a specific question of, did something happen in the last week that you said to yourself, wow, that's never happened before? And you can get some really interesting signals that are of the new variety, the novelty thing. You can pick up that way. In fact, that's a really good thing to do if you're doing a sort of continuous capture, where people have to, you know, they come and maybe once a week they have this ritual of sitting down and going over things. And if you ask, what happened this week that never happened before, then you can get this new signal. Yeah. You can start seeing, you know, look, 10 people this week said that this thing happened that had never happened before. And they all said the same thing. Maybe we should be paying attention to that.
Yeah, well, that's what we tried when I was working at OSE and asked to all the services facilities what was the most, unusual service request you had this week, and do that with 2,000 or 2,000. Well, by the way, we never did it with 2,000, but that was the plan.
Yeah.
The hope. If you do that at 2,000 locations worldwide, the aim was to find changes in the customer demand pattern that might indicate the emergence of a need for a new services line. And we never got that far, but I still think it's a good idea to have a lot of locations where you do basically the same thing and ask all the people on the premises what's the most striking or strange or out of the ordinary service request or event you had this week. And that was caused by one story that we encountered where we were visiting, that one guy said, well, we have this accounting system and our site places 90% of its revenue in the other category because what we do doesn't fit in the normal categories. He didn't do copying and printing anymore. He did something completely different and was very profitable, but it all went in the other category. Yeah. So for him, then that was the new normal. Yeah.
Yeah. Whenever I think of this weak signal stuff, I always think of, you know, the famous detectives like, Sherlock Holmes. If you think of some of the Sherlock Holmes stories, and especially there was that, who was that guy that did it in the 70s or 80s? I really like that actor. I forget his name now, but better than the recent one, I think. But he would be like, there's a scene with all these things in his apartment or whatever, and he just zeroes on to some absolutely trivial detail that everyone else has paid no attention to. Like there's a little smudge on someone's finger, right? Or their shoe has a wear pattern or something like that. And it's the thing that he's doing is he's taking the trivial, the overlooked, and raising it to this level of paying attention to it. And everyone's response is, what? That doesn't matter. You know, but it does matter. So I'm trying to think, does that fit into any of these things? To some extent, it doesn't fit any of them because it's not necessarily assumptions. It's more of, it's like a foreground background thing.
Yeah, I would almost call that skill instead of weak signal detection. But it's more the out of, yeah.
Well, but you know, if you think about Sherlock Holmes, he's always saying things like that, you know, you would only get that wear on your fingernail if you were,
yeah,
you know, repeatedly hitting something with a shovel. You know what I mean? It's like, or this brand of shovel. It's like he has information, he has knowledge, mm-hmm, that causes him to see something that everyone else is disregarding. So what I'm trying to say is there may be a form of weak signal that has to do with knowledge. That it's weak because you don't know enough to realize that it's not weak. You know what I mean? And that's... Yeah.
It's a weak signal to somebody who can't look at the situation with open eyes and with a view to understanding the whole complex interplay. But for someone who looks at the world in that way, it's not a weak signal. It screams.
Well, it's not just a worldview. It's more like they have specific information that makes it not weak, right?
I know what the wear pattern would be on a shoe if you happen to work in a cement factory.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. That's the kind of thing that, and I think that's a seventh kind, right? Because it's, I know, weak because of ignorance.
Yeah, but is it weak because the observer is uniquely trained?
Yeah.
It has to do more with the observer than with the signal.
Yes.
So that's the reason why scale eventually matters in P&I, because the more unique perspectives you have, people you have, a story, the observer, and if you look at the storytellers as observers of the world, then this way you will find that one unique observer that sees things that other people don't.
They are more curious than the others.
Yeah, or they're different.
More knowledgeable.
Yeah, or they have an other value system. They look at, I had a boss once that said, Harold, your heaven is my hell, and the other way around.
Mm-hmm.
If the whole world is in order, you're in heaven, I'm in hell. Mm-hmm. I said, you're wrong, but it doesn't matter. Let's...
Different perspectives. Well, that's one of the things I always say that works when you listen to stories, is that if you ask questions that are direct questions, that it is inappropriate to respond with a story, you only get answers that come, you know, it's like shooting an arrow, you get exactly the thing of the arrow, whereas asking for a story, you get a whole bunch of stuff that you didn't ask for. And among the stuff that you didn't ask for is something that could address the ignorance that you have that led you to ask for the wrong thing. Like, you can ask the wrong question and get the right answer if you frame your question as something that you would tell a story in response to. So that I would say that this weakness because of ignorance is something that's particularly well suited to addressing with story based stuff. Let's see, we got 7. Can we get 8?
Is this an auction?
Well, I just like to see how many you can, you know.
Your last example reminded me of a colleague of mine who has studied Kiersey temperament and a few other personality types. And he focused on how they express themselves in the facial muscles. So he's always watching every little tick and tweak and, you know, pop in facial muscles. And that's how he comes to his assessment of personality type.
Wow.
Mm. Annoys the crap out of everybody.
Yeah.
But those are pretty weak signals to most people, but to him, they're loud and clear.
Exactly.
Yeah, it's funny that you say so, because last week we finished an e-learning, e-learning training that includes, how do you call it? What, there's a name for it. I will remember. Predictive profiling.
Mm-hmm.
So who changes his walking pattern when he sees a cop in a station? If you talk to somebody, how do their facial muscles? So the Israeli anti-terrorism units are very good at that. They developed it, and it's now part of the training of a lot of security people that start to recognize signs of nervousness.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, or transpiration or breath or all these signs that you can't suppress. The security.
Yeah, it seems like weak is the wrong term. We should call them subtle.
Yes. And
somebody with some sophistication to discern them and interpret them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So that person, they're not weak.
Right.
No. But there are subtle things that are only noticeable by trained people. So it's a characteristic of the observer.
Yeah.
Is the server, is the observer? Oh,
yeah. These are all characteristics of the. Well, no, some of them are of the system itself.
Yeah. Yeah, some are statistical, some are observer-related, some are network-related, they're distributed, some are overshadowed.
Yeah, that's the system.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have another one. I was thinking about...
we get to an even number here.
Yeah, we get to an even number. I was thinking about, there was this guy I knew in college who was just really unparalleled in learning the birds. Like we were learning, I was in biology, we were supposed to learn a lot of birds. And he could just watch any little dot fly across a field and tell you what species it was. And he was just really exceptional about that. And somebody said, why are you so good at doing that? And he said, well, if you saw one of your friends walking down the street, you'd know them in an instant, right? You'd know it was them and not somebody else because you know them. They're your friends. You pay attention to them because you care about them. And he said, these bird species are my friends. I know them because I care about them, right? So, and that also reminds me of, if you take any little kid, right, who's two or three, and they're talking, the parent always knows exactly what they're saying, but anyone else, it just sounds like nothing. It's just bam, 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 right? And then the parent's like, well, he just said, you know, I have just proved Einstein's relativity theorem or something like that, right? And it's always amazing that the parent can tell you this in fine detail exactly what the kid said, but no one else can. And it's because the parent pays attention, right? It's a virtue of attention. So I think number eight for weakness, I can take, is disinterest, right? Like if you're not interested, if you're not paying attention, then something's going to be weak. But if you're really focused and you care, it's almost like a lack of caring, really. If you care about the thing, you're going to be paying attention. Like someone knows, like if I found that if I'm in a big social setting, you know, in a mall or some place where there's loads and loads of people, and I'm trying to get my husband's attention and I can't, he doesn't hear me or whatever, all I have to do is cough. Because he can recognize my cough in an instant. Anybody can recognize the cough or sneeze or whatever of someone that they're close to, because there's all kinds of details that you don't even realize you know of the people that you're close to because you pay attention to them because they're important to you. So that's another one, disinterest. And in fact, that's a thing that could happen a lot in an organization or a community, which is, it's kind of related to the powerlessness, but you know, like secretaries and people like that, they get overlooked a lot because they're kind of just in the background. They're they slide into
the noise.
Yeah, they're noise. Yeah. And also some people prefer being in the background. And so they kind of fade into the background, but you can sort of pull them out and say, we'd really like to hear from you. You know, tell us what your experience has been. And then most of the time they're like, I can't believe you actually want to know that. Mm-hmm.
You know, now that you've enumerated eight different types of weak signals,
mm-hmm.
it seems like the strong signal is the one that we should be most suspicious of.
Yeah, in some ways, yeah.
Well,
I guess that's part of what a consultant does sometimes, is say, yes, we've turned over the big rock and we found it, and now let's turn over some of these smaller rocks.
Yes.
Well, if the goal of your project is, I'm not interested why people are happy about my organization, but I want to find the customers that think differently or think we are overdoing our services level, I think it's almost the goal of the project. Because these customers could be the early signs that something is going wrong in the organization, or novel demands in the market that some people adopt earlier than others. They're the early adopters in your customer base. And I think, the more I think about it, I think the what I just said, did you ever do a project where there were no weak signals? I think there is, it's relevant that it's signals. It's rarely one weak signal that you find in a project. It's usually a whole range. Different weak signals that make the results look rather messy, because there are so many, there's such a variety of perspectives coming into a P&I project when you do collection right, that it's sometimes hard to not disappoint some people in the organization because you didn't attend to a part of that.
Mm-hmm.
We had it last week that people said, well, but you didn't use all the stories in the sense-making sessions. Why did we have to type them all in? Yeah.
If you didn't know which ones.
We've been talking about weak signals as if the value was in the signal once revealed or understood. It also strikes me that if a signal is weak, the fact that it looks weak to one group but not to the other group tells me something valuable about the group.
Oh, absolutely. Yes.
There's a reason why I didn't give that much credit. You know, I didn't like the idea. It's threatening to me. I prefer not to see it.
Mm-hmm.
So that tells me about the recipient, not mm-hmm. the signal.
Yes.
Well, the dictators in the organization tend to be very interested in the in the other voices for totally other reasons than the people that generated the signal.
Well, I would say that the property of weakness resides in the observer rather than in the signal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, well, I have a ninth thing.
Oh my God.
Okay, so when you said you turn over the big rocks and not the little rocks, of course I remembered when I was a kid, I spent a lot of time in streams trying to find crayfish. Crabs, we called them, but they were crayfish. And of course, every time we found one, we would bring one home and put it in a jar and it would die, because nobody ever told me that they needed running water to survive. So I feel bad about that now. But anyway, the challenge with that was you would go and you would pick up a rock, right? And you would look under it. Now, picking up the rock created turbulence in the water, and it created a lot of dust in the water, right? And so you had to wait for the dust to settle before you could see the crayfish. But while the dust was settling, the crayfish had an interest in disappearing under the little pebbles and things, right? So there was this kind of race between me waiting for the dust to settle, standing there holding the rock, right? And the crayfish trying to get back under before I could see it, right? Mm-hmm. So, and that was a difficult process. It was required patience. You'd have to look under 10 or 20 different rocks before you could find one that hadn't gone away before you found it. So I'm realizing that a 10th weakness is because of difficulty looking, right? If something's hard to find, people just give up. They say, well, there might have been something they saw, but they didn't look because it was harder to look. Like if you're going to drill down, if you're drilling for oil and you drill down 100 feet, there might have been something 101 feet deep, but you didn't drill that far, and so you think there's nothing there. So I'm going to put number nine as difficulty, or it's not wanting to effort, not wanting to take the effort. Because I can think of lots of cases where people would say, in fact, I've been on projects where I say, okay, we start out at the beginning, we have our planning thing, we say, okay, ideally we would like to reach all of these different groups. You know, we need these kind of people and this kind of people and this. And then people will be like, well, that, we'd have to go into certain neighborhoods, that's a little harder to do, or we would have to, call up these people, or we'd have to, you know, get these people to agree to this, and we can't do that, and so we just aren't going to go there. And so there's a whole
fill out a survey.
Yeah, exactly.
You want to? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's a lack of sort of resolve and investing effort in something is that people say, well, that's good enough, and so that's a weak signal. That's the reason it's weak, is that they didn't invest in it.
It's almost a tuning in problem. Did you put your microphone there? No, you didn't. You didn't reach these groups. And you only reached two of them because they happened to be in the building.
Yep. I would say that is one of the major reasons that projects fail to achieve what people had wanted, is that they say, oh yes, we really want to do this. And then you say, okay, if you want to achieve that, you have to do A, B, and C. And they say, well, we'll do A and B, but C seems like too much effort. You know, I'm really motivated to get to 10 now.
So that's attenuation of a signal that is there, but it's a tuning problem.
How about habituation? Oh, that fits into assumptions, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Guys, I predict that by tomorrow morning, Cynthia will come up with a list of 20. So don't be surprised. We add 10 and it will be 20 in a blog.
No, I think 10's a good number.
10's a good number, okay.
Well, part of what I'm hearing is that the weakness of the signal is not a property of the signal. It's a relational property between the signal and the receptors.
Yeah, it's just choice.
That's a whole system in which both are embedded.
Yeah. The signal may be weak at work, but when I go home to my family, it may be the strongest signal.
Yes.
It's the same signal, but it's a different, I'm relating to a different audience.
I actually think habituation qualifies.
Anything to get to 10, yes.
Yeah. No, I think it qualifies as distinct from assumptions, because, I mean, habituation means if you tap my arm 3 times, I'm going to notice it. But if you tap my arm 1,000 times, by then, I don't even know it's happening anymore. Yeah. People tune out repeated stimuli to the point where it's still a thing. It's important. And maybe it even changed in some important way, but because you've tuned it out, you're just not listening to it anymore.
So it could be annoying personal habits.
Yes.
Stylistic thing.
Well, the book that I showed earlier, it has chapter titles like The Infrastructure of Mindful Organizing, and there were some nice, what was it? I think it's in the next chapter. Preoccupation with Failure. Cues of evolving failure. Normalizing.
Helplessness. Well, that's a form of habituation, maybe.
Institutionalized wariness. Forcing people. What does it mean? An institutionalized wariness. Yeah. Misspecification, misestimating, misunderstanding. That's close to, it's become a habit to look at it that way.
That's habituation.
Yeah. And then he starts talking about how to prevent it and says doubt as a mindset.
All right. Well, I think we've kind of reached our, I don't know how long we've been recording. It doesn't tell you how long you've been recording. At
least well, something about a little over an hour.
Okay. A little over an hour.
Yeah.
So I need to run.
What's that?
So.
Yeah. I think we should, I think we have a nice list. It's cool. I don't think that it's all that helpful to talk about how specifically each one of these or any of it is addressed by P&I, because I think they all are, and they're all things that it's interesting to take into account. It would be neat to make a list of these things and say, okay, when you're planning a project, you could talk about each one and say, okay, which ones of these are really important to our project? And which do we want to like embed in the whole thing, you know, that we want to draw up. We want to pull up signals that are weak because of these particular reasons.
Yeah, but I think what you said earlier, when I started saying certain types of signals belong to certain phases, I think you're right. If you look at the evaluation step that we put in BNI because there was no place for it, I think these signals, did we reach the right people? Did we do the catalysis study right? Did we have enough churning in the sense-making phase to enable this kind of weak signal to be noticed, to be chosen? I think these are very valuable evaluation questions.
Yes, I think it's true. Well, both planning and evaluation.
Yeah. What you call planning. In planning and evaluation, this might, and the design of the sense-making session, I think these are the most prominent places where you have time to evaluate this. Are we really on the right course? Are we really designing? Because once you're doing collection and the plan is executed, you have little chance of changing this. But in the planning phase, the planning of sense making and the evaluation of the project, so what you call return, mm-hmm. these are the dominant phases where you should look and can influence, are we doing things right?
Well, and because of this raising of weak signals is a choice, it makes sense to look at this list of sense things and say, which of these matter to us? Do we care about signals that are weak because they're rare? Not mm-hmm. so much. Do we care about signals that are weak because it's difficult to get at them and no one's ever tried before? Maybe that's one we really care about. Like, and also it has to do with, I think, what you said, Jerry, about that the weak signal is an opportunity to discover like pent up energy for change or for, for making things better or for, yeah, improving things. That, you know, which of these do we have energy around? Which do we feel like are a thing that could create energy? So that, you know, it would be part of planning to sort of prioritize these things and say, which of the opportunities here, which do we think are opportunities? Of course, you could be surprised, but that's why you would iterate. You would then go into evaluation and say, well, we thought that this opportunity to find weak signals would be exciting, but it turned out to not really work out. But this other one did surprise us.
And that would be a stark departure from what most of my clients want to do. They want to find the modal, most common, most consensual position and run with it in the hope that that will have the most momentum. But to sit around and ask, what are all the weak signals that we'll probably miss that we really want to attend to?
Right. Well, I think it's complementary. I think it's good to do both.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But they're going to have to think counterclockwise.
Yes. I like that. I like that phrase, think counterclockwise. That's nice.
Yeah, but I think, Jerry, it has to do with the goal of the project. If it's just 2% of customers that are unhappy with your brand and you're growing at 20% a year.
Who cares?
Well, yeah, who cares? I would be more interested in keeping the 20% as long as the 2% is not creeping towards 10%, because you can never keep anybody happy. But if you're in a stable market and you're losing your most experienced people because they get bored with your organization and you're not innovating anymore,
yeah,
like happened to the tax office in the Netherlands, they offered a package to leave the organization that was so attractive that anybody left. They all left.
And here I thought we were screwy in America.
Well, you don't have taxes. We've got lots of taxes, but they can't pay them anymore. They can't get them anymore because nobody's working at the tax office. Okay. It's full of, how do you say that? Insourcing people, hired people.
Oh, God.
It's a big scandal over here.
Well, I have to go down to meet with my client this afternoon, who is the tax office here in the county of Santa Clara.
You can tell the Dutch story.
You can tell that funny story.
Yeah, you can tell that story. Yeah. It's true, by the way. It's not a joke. It's really true.
Oh, I can believe it. I can believe it. We've done stupider things here in the county.
Yeah. But
okay, well, with that funny story, I think we should stop the recording.